This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
Welcome in to the Sports Objective. I'm Dave Richmond, along with ladies and gentlemen, Kyle Barber. How are you, Kyle from LaGrange?
What's going on, Dave from Williamston? How are you on this lovely Thursday evening in July?
I'm doing very well, rocking my Guns N' Roses t-shirt. I'm going to have to rob a few banks to go to that concert you just told me about in the green room. Bubba Rosenbaum, how are you, sir?
Doing well, guys. Looking forward to
He's looking forward to finishing his sentence at a later date.
Yeah, no doubt about it. He's starstruck.
After his first stint in East Carolina, was an assistant in New Mexico, and he actually recruited tonight's guest, Gabriel Miculas. He came to us from Cordoba, Argentina, and actually played for Bill Herrien. Gabe, welcome into the show.
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me over.
No doubt about it. Now, Gabe, you're actually now in Charlotte, right? That's what Bubba told me.
Yes, that is correct. I got here 3 months ago. I got my permanent resident card. I'm married to my wife. She's from Charlotte. So we're getting established in the city.
Well, welcome to North Carolina, but now it's your first trip, obviously, to North Carolina. How does it feel to be in the old North State? I won't say the other nickname we have because we're not Tar Heels. So sorry, all the Tar Heel Nation out there, but we're Pirates. So how does it feel to be in the Queen City in North Carolina?
Oh, it feels good. It feels good. I've been coming over for 15 years. You know, we have family here. So I'm starting to know the city very well. I love it. It's great weather, nice atmosphere. It's really enjoyable. There are a lot of things to do. So I'm looking forward to continue my life in this area.
No question about it. We wanted to have you on tonight. Obviously, before we had some technical difficulties, I think it was a year or two ago, Bubba.
It's been quite a while, and we were trying to do that interview via Skype, but hey, now we're live, and you know, Pirate Nation can chime in.
No question about it. By the way, before we get started with Gabe, happy belated birthday to, speaking of a Pirate basketball fan, Gabe, Pirate Al, his birthday was yesterday, to Alan Powell, our good friend, and I want to give him a shout-out, one of the best Pirate basketball fans you'll ever meet and one of the best guys ever to meet, period. So happy birthday, belated birthday to Pirate Al.
Happy birthday.
No question. Gabe, let's talk about your recruitment since we're having you finally on now. How did you get to Greenville, North Carolina and play for Coach Herrien?
I was playing Argentina. I was playing for the national youth team. We went to play the World Cup in Portugal, and there was a scout, a European scout, that he was looking for players to come to college, to the U.S. So he came in contact with a few universities, and actually the first one that I ever talked to was UNC Charlotte. That was the first school that I talked to, and then I talked to a few other universities. New Mexico, talked to SMU, Fairfield University, ECU, and the ones that were more interest was New Mexico and ECU, and both assistant coaches, Joe Dooley and Steve Clifford, they got on a plane, they went to see me in Cordoba. See me play, talk to my family. That was the first contact that I had with coaches. And they were there for a week. They went down there. They saw me play. They talked to me. They met my family. Then I also came to the U.S. and visited these universities. I went to St. Bonaventure, too. And I ended up deciding to go to ECU.
Well, glad that you did. You had an outstanding career, right, Bubba?
Yeah, tremendous career. There a moment ago, I put Gabe's career stats on the screen there at the top. You see nearly 1,100 points, ranking 23rd all time. One of, I think it's 30 or 32 Pirates to top that 1,000-point plateau. And then over 500 career rebounds, as you see, 502 to be exact, which ranks 24th all time. So just a tremendously productive and also steady career, because I think you were anywhere from like 10 or 11 to 15 points every year. And then, you know, 5-plus rebounds every year.
Yeah. I wish I could have had more rebounds, but I had Errol Binning on my side. He didn't let me get one.
Exactly. We visited with Errol. Errol came on probably a couple years ago now, and I remember one game against South Florida when Errol pulled down 24 rebounds.
Yeah, I mean, he was a rebounding machine.
Yeah, I was going to say a rebound monster. That guy was just – you guys were a good rebounding team, and talk about one of the things that I was thinking about, knowing that we were going to have you on, thinking about on literally Tuesday, is about how the game has changed so much with now it's more of a perimeter game. But I miss that low post. I like a combination of both outside shooting and, you know, low post. It seems like everybody's just shooting from 3-point land now.
Yeah, even the big guys. Big guys get out there and shoot. Yeah, I wouldn't be able to play today. I'll be too slow.
I know Joe Dooley would find a spot for you, my friend. I know he still would.
So Gabe, talk about what made you settle on East Carolina. You know, what made you choose the Pirates, Bill Herring, Greg Herenda, and that staff over some of those other schools you mentioned, like New Mexico and Charlotte, some programs that have pretty rich basketball tradition. And then after you talk about that, we'll dive into your specific story as far as Joe Dooley, who's obviously the head coach of East Carolina now.
Well, beside the fact that when I got to the hotel room in Greenville and they had the room packed with sodas, candy, and a huge chocolate cake. Besides that fact, I also like the coaches, and I like the university, and I like where the program was heading. I mean, it was very exciting knowing that we were going to Conference USA to play against top teams. I think that was the major factor in deciding to come to ECU. And like I said just now, I feel welcome to ECU. When I went to see, for example, Southern Methodist, that I like the university and I like the program, and it was a nice area. We were two guys visiting at the same time, and for the other guy, they had like a jersey with his name on it, waiting, his room, and I didn't get that, so I was like, I don't know if these guys want me that much. So that kind of like, I decided not to consider SMU. Then New Mexico, I really like Coach Dooley. I thought that he was a great guy, a great coach. And I think the head coach at that time, I can't remember his name precisely. I think it was Joe Priscilla or something like that, I think. And I read online that he was kind of like a tough coach and having some problem with players. So that also, threw me off going there. And the other schools up north, St. Bonaventure and Fairfield, it was going to be like far from Argentina and cold weather. I didn't want to go into the snow. And I really like ECU. I like it was a small town. Everything evolved around the university. The coaching staff was really nice. Steve Clifford, when he went to Argentina, he was, really nice. He really took care of me. When I came here, like, he found out that I liked sweets a lot. That's why he had the room packed with sweets and chocolates and all that stuff. So I feel welcome, and I feel like they really wanted me at ECU.
I believe the coach you were trying to think of from New Mexico, was it Fran Fraschilla?
Yes, Fran Fraschilla.
Because now He's been out of coaching for a while now. He's a longtime ESPN commentator.
Okay. Yes. That's him.
But as soon as you arrived onto the scene at East Carolina, East Carolina was in its final year in the Colonial Athletic Association, the CAA, that conference, and then making that transition to Conference USA, like you referenced earlier, some of the tremendous competition. But just talk about how you, when you, that very first year as a freshman, I mean, you played significant minutes, probably close to 30 minutes a game. Did you know that you had the chance to play so much so early?
No, I didn't know. I didn't know any of my teammates. When I got to ECU and we're playing pickup games and starting to do workouts, I started to know them, but I had no idea what the coaches were going to do. And it was actually surprising because they decided to start three freshmen that first season. It was Earl Bing and Jimmy Bishop and myself. Three freshmen in the starting lineup, you know, was a big risk that the coach was taking. We didn't expect that. So that was a surprise, but it was great. I got to play, like you said, a lot of minutes right away. And it was hard at the beginning, you know, adjusting to the college game. It was much different from what I was the kind of playing the game we're doing in Argentina. So it took some time. It was more athletic. Guys were running the court more than we do in Argentina. So it took some time to adjust.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And Dave, go ahead and chime in.
I was just going to ask you, Gabe, about was it I mean, I've always wanted to go to Argentina. There's something about the great continent of South America. I think it's just very charming with the atmosphere, with all the countries there. But anyway, not going to talk about geography lesson, but how much of a culture shock from someone that's from Argentina who comes to Greenville, North Carolina? I bet you've never had any have you ever had any barbecue? Like, and had you had that before you came to?
No, but I became a huge fan. I mean, I love football games. I mean, that was the best time of the week, going to the football games and sitting in the parking lot and having a barbecue sandwich. I mean, it was awesome.
What about the beer? Did you have a lot of beer there? I mean, being a college kid.
Well, you know what? I don't drink beer. I could never drink beer. I try, but I have not, you know, I don't have that acquired taste. I'm more like a wine guy, you know. I'm more Argentinian. We like our red wine.
Okay, that's fair. That's a lot of good stuff there too.
So, Gabe, before we get back into basketball talk, as we talk about different barbecue, and you mentioned you're a sweets fan or a candy fan. What's your favorite American candy, and then what's your favorite South American or Argentinian candy?
I like jelly beans. Jelly beans. That's my favorite.
That's my jam.
I love those guys. I love. And I like chocolate too. I mean, I love chocolate. Lindt will be my favorite brand chocolate. I love, we don't get much Lindt chocolate in Argentina. So that's my favorite one here. And Argentina, I love alfajores. It's like a cookie sandwich. It's like usually chocolate. And that's my favorite over there. I mean, I eat a lot, and we eat a lot of those.
I'll give you a suggestion, since you're now in the States full-time. If you like Lindt, you like quality chocolate, there's a company called Seez, S-E-E-S, Seez, just like it sounds. They make box chocolate, different stuff. They're based on the West Coast. If you get a chance to get any of it, it's expensive, but it's fantastic.
All right, I'll try it. I'm going to try it. I definitely will.
Welcome into the chocolate objective. I'm your host, Dave Richmond.
Any good recipes?
I'm just more of a traditional guy. I guess, like, if I get like a candy bar or Hershey's or something like that, Reese's is my favorite. Reese's cups are my.
Okay.
Yeah, that's my.
You know, Dave, there's just something completely different about a Hershey's with almond versus a plain Hershey's. There's something completely different about the chocolate to me.
So you like the, which do you like better?
Oh, the Hershey's with almond. It just has a totally, the chocolate seems, I don't know why, but the chocolate seems so much better quality than a regular Hershey bar. I have no idea if it's just a mental thing, but it just seems that way.
Hey, Gabe, did I see a future pirate that just came in the picture there?
Yeah.
Can we recruit a future recruit?
I already started working on her jump shot.
Yeah, well, we've got a great coach now. So, Coach McNeil, definitely. Hey, Coach McNeil, you've got a great – I'm sure that she's going to be as great as her dad.
Gabe, so talk about the transition from playing in the Colonial into Conference USA. I mean, how big was the jump in competition? I mean, you nothing against CAA. CAA was a good league. Mm-hmm. But Conference USA, you had Marquette, you had Louisville, you had Cincinnati, you had DePaul, Charlotte, St. Louis in those days. In those days, Conference USA was a premier basketball league.
Yes. We prepare, but it was hard. In my case, it was also different because that sophomore year, I get suspended for having professional players in Argentina. So I missed the first 13 games, and I missed, I think, the first two or three games of Conference USA. So it was different, and it was harder to adjust. I hadn't have played a game in a few months, and going straight into Conference USA against, you know, good teams, that even made it harder. When we got to Conference USA, you could see some very, very good players, and we had to adjust our tactics. We started doing more doubling other players. You know, you couldn't let them go. We had to pay a lot of attention to, like, the good players. And, you know, you never got an easy game. It was always a tough team. You never got a break. It was every night you had to bring it out. I guess in the Colonial Conference, sometimes you could not play your best and still have a chance or still win. But in Conference USA, you had to be on top of your game every single night. And if you didn't, you got beat by 20, 30, especially on the road. The road was so, so hard to play on the road. So I think that was the major thing with Conference USA. We had to be on our best game every night just to be able to compete.
It's hard to remember going back. I'm sure Bubba does. But I'm asking you, Gabe, what was the first big win that we had in Conference USA? Marquette was over top 10. But if I remember right, it seemed Louisville. Like Louisville.
Louisville at home. Yes. That was – and I think that was – also, the first time the Minges was packed, at least since I was there, I think that was the first game that the gym was packed. So that was a huge, huge win. I mean, I think the guys, the crowd even stormed the – I mean, I don't think Luba was ranked at that time, but they still, you know, stormed the court after the game.
Yeah, I think Patino had just gotten there, I believe.
That
was his first season, I believe.
Yeah, and he made comments about our fans storming the court, calling us a bunch of drunk rednecks or something along those lines.
I mean, speaking of Patino, Kyle, since you brought him up, you're probably not even aware of this, Gabe, but there was a video on the internet at that time when that kind of thing was much less common than it is nowadays, where it would be easy to overlook. But Coach Patino was walking into the arena before the game, and you know how they had the gold mats on the floor for the cheerleaders. And so there was that mat on the floor, and Coach Patino tripped over the mat and got upset. It was pretty funny.
I mean, they gave me a hard time at Minges. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, I would imagine Patino did, from the time he walked in tripping over the mat to, like you're saying, the Minges Maniacs giving him a tough time. And
yes,
you know, old Ricky boy brings it on himself. Where is he coaching at now?
He's up in the Northeast at Iona.
Iona, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about the very fact you were talking about the Talk about the atmosphere. I tell you what, I've always said it. Maybe I'm biased, and I am. I'm a homer. But talk about the playing there at Williams Arena at Menchie's Coliseum. That place, Bubba and I were at, Bubba, that game we were sitting on the bleachers at that Charlotte game a couple years ago, was so loud, and we beat Charlotte and beat the 49ers. And Bubba loves when we anytime we can beat Charlotte, right, Bubba?
Of course, anytime you beat in-state opponents like that, especially ones you've struggled against historically like Charlotte, it's a lot of fun. But, I remember those first four games of ComChusA. Three of those were at home against the likes of Cincinnati. That was the first ever ComChusA game. And then I believe I looked it up today. We went on the road to UAB, and then we had Charlotte and also then the Louisville game, which we won. We had near misses against Cincinnati and Charlotte. Both of those losses came by 10 points or less. And
Bubba cut out on us there. But,
one of the things I remember about that Cincinnati game, guys, Gabe, you were talking about how you were suspended. You remember competing against Demaine Duckett. He's someone I went to high school with, and he's on the football team. You know, he was 6'6 and about 290 or 300 pounds.
Yeah, he was one that was such a tremendous athlete. Let's ask you this. Who was the toughest guy to play with?
Do you remember Demaine Duckett playing with him, Gabe?
Yes, I do. He was so strong. My gosh, so strong. I mean, he was banging us. He was so big. He was such a competitor. He was a nice guy, too. Coming off from football and, you know, giving us a hand, you know, going hard at it. I mean, he really helped us get better. I mean, he was so, so athletic. And, you know, he pushed us. He had so much energy. Yeah, I remember him very well.
So, Gabe, talk about the fact that who was the hardest guy and to guard in practice, or who was the real competitor that maybe Pirate fans wouldn't know behind the scenes?
Well, I'll say probably Travis Hogan Fay. He was a tough competitor. He just wanted to win. It didn't matter what. He just went out. He had that attitude, that competitive attitude, and he was, you know, it was great for, you know, for our point guard to be that way. You know, he'll push us, he didn't care about anything in the games. You know, he'll just, you know, go at it. You know, he wasn't very strong, he wasn't very tall, but, I mean, that guy, he just, you know, he was fearless, and he was the same way in practice. I like his attitude towards the game.
Gabe, what was your favorite win during your time at East Carolina? I'm sure everybody has a game that sticks out the most. What was your favorite win during your time as a Pirate?
I have two. Can I choose two?
Sure. Choose as many as you want.
Well, the first one, I guess, because also I was just getting to ECU – and it was my second game at ECU, and we won the tournament at Marist University. That was the second game of my freshman year, and I had a very good game. I was MVP of the tournament. And, you know, always winning a tournament, you know, it's important. So that victory, you know, I think that really stayed with me. And then, of course, the game that we beat Marquette at home on my senior year, that was a huge, huge win, too. It was a great atmosphere. They were ranked in the top 10. That was a quality win. And also, you know, that was my last game before I got injured. So that win also stuck with me.
Gabe, it always seemed like when Coach Arian was here, and, you know, like you said, we talked about, we had transitioned into Conference USA, step up in competition. It always seemed like we were going to turn the corner. It always seemed like, because you guys were, you played competitive games. You didn't get blown out, particularly at home. And didn't get blown out on the road very often after the first year or so in Conference USA. It seemed like always we were going to turn the corner. I remember one year we got off to a real hot start, non-conference play, and then we never quite seemed to do it. Can you put your finger on why? Was it just the competition in the conference USA was so tough, or why do you think we never did quite turn that corner and you know, become a winning program? That, you know, when I say a winning program, I mean making the NCAA or NIT.
I think because, like I said a little bit ago, that we usually, towards the end of the season, we had a bad stretch. We usually ended up the season on a losing streak, on a losing note. And I think that was because since every game requires so much energy mentally and physically, like, we had to be 100% ready for every game. We never got an easy game. You know, we could never win by 20, 30, you know, sit the bench and rest and laugh and enjoy the game. No, it was always, you know, the games that we won, it was always, you know, close by 5, by 10 points. And then, you know, we'll lose by 5, 10. So I think that took a toll on us physically and mentally. And that's why toward the end of the season, we started losing. And like you said, we couldn't turn the corner.
Yeah, there was just never any let up. You guys had to compete so hard to compete at that level. It took, you know, all your energy every game. And like you're saying, by the end of the season, you guys were out of gas.
Exactly. I think that was the major thing that was happening in Conference USA.
Yeah.
Gabe, I think we actually have that Marquette clip, don't we?
Yeah, Gabe. That entire game can be found on YouTube. So here recently, Johnny Gardner and I, who's one of our loyal viewers and listeners, we went back and watched that game. So many great memories. And there was a play there. It was around the 2 or 3 minute mark left in the game, and you made a nice pass to Musa, and Musa jammed it for what was a 3-point play, I believe. I believe he converted the free throw. But and then we also have that the final miss of the game tying 3-point attempt by Dwayne Wade. And let's take a look at that.
Wow, what great stuff there, Gabe. Gabe, you look exactly the same. What in the world? Like, you have very good genetics. I told you we can get you about 2 more years. We can pretend you're this with a new transfer portal. There's so many players in it, nobody will know the difference.
Well, maybe because I just retired, but in a few more months, I wouldn't be able to even walk the court.
Gabe, you said you enjoyed going to football games during your time at East Carolina and tailgating. You live in Charlotte now. Pirate football opens the season in about a month in Charlotte, there at the Panther Stadium against App State on a neutral field site. Are you going to go?
Oh, yes, I'm going.
All right. Gabe will be supporting his Pirates.
Yes, always.
And now you can see a lot of games.
Something else, Gabe, in addition to that football game in Charlotte against App State that Kyle mentioned on September 2nd, the basketball team will be down there. I'm trying to remember the exact date. It's sometime in November, I believe, maybe right before Thanksgiving or early December 1. But the basketball team will be there playing Liberty, who's been very good, like a 30-win team in recent years.
Wow. Wow. Well, that'll be interesting to go watch that game too.
Yeah, do you think you could like give us a couple series up and down the court? We can sneak you in and get a couple big shots and might that.
Gabe, wait. just go ahead, Gabe. At this point, just tell Dave, yes, you're going to come back and play. Okay.
I'll go in to see some free throws if that's
okay. All right.
Dave's going to die on that hill.
Yeah, exactly. Gabe, talk about what you're doing now, everybody in Pirate Nation. That's one of the reasons why we started this show, is to, for guys like you, the ladies and men that put on the purple and gold, the blood, the sweat, and the tears, and brought a lot of happiness to Pirate Nation. What are you up to now in Charlotte?
Well, I'm trying to find a job. I moved here 3 months ago, so I've been coming and going back and forth from Argentina. And now, you know, my wife, she got a job. And now, you know, I have a degree in accounting from ECU. So I'm applying for jobs, trying to get a job in accounting or that field. And watching my daughter, now that she's out of school, my wife is working. So I stay home, dad, and watch her and take her to the pool. Sorry.
That's a tough life.
So any business owners or CEOs in the Charlotte area that are Pirates that may be watching or listening to this, you got a former Pirate basketball player here who is still loyal to the university. He's going to go support the football program here in a few weeks. Pirates supporting Pirates. Got a degree in accounting. So if you're looking for someone to do some accounting work, hire Gabriel.
Please.
In fact, Gabriel, there's Pirate Club chapter there in Charlotte is one of the best, and I know there's a lot of great business owners there. And certainly,
Gabe, actually, where I work in Kinston, North Carolina, we need someone for accounting. It's a hell of a commute from Charlotte, though.
Well, like 4 hours, four hours.
Yeah.
Well, how about the we have the big runway? We could get Gabe. Maybe do you guys have a good jet there, a company jet, Kyle?
We do not have a company jet, no. Oh, but certainly, he has to fly commuter.
I tried, but seriously, Gabe, there's a lot of great people. I know, talk to Bubba, there's a lot of people there in the Pirate Club, there in Charlotte. When he gets back on there, we'll have him, I'm sure. But certainly, I know there are a lot of people that are pulling hard for you. And certainly when it comes to a lot of former players, that was one of the questions I have. Speaking of former players, are you close with any of the guys still from your team in that era, the Bill Herrien era?
I got together with Jimmy Bishop a few weeks ago when I went down to Fort Lauderdale in Florida. I got together with him. I hadn't seen him in a while. And then I talked to Errol Bean too. We were playing in Europe, and I saw him in Switzerland. I got together with him, and we had a nice reunion. And then online, I've been in touch with some guys from time to time. Musa Badien, also. Those are the guys that I stay more in touch. And then also I talked to Travis, too, because he's a good friend of a guy that was playing in Argentina. So I got to talk to him and see how he was doing. Yeah.
That's really cool. I know a lot of people always wonder, that's what we say, whatever happened to these players, you know, the former players, and you guys, the ladies are doing that. And by the way, our good friend Johnny Gardner put up there as far as the Liberty game. I think he says December the 17th. Yeah, Friday, December 17th, Gabe. So save that date.
Yes. What is it going to be, Helen?
Bubba, where?
Say it again, Dave. You broke up.
The Liberty Where's game. That? What arena?
It's being played at the Spectrum Center in the Hornets arena.
Wow. That's right.
And it's one of four games that day. It's the Hall of Fame Classic. And it was supposed to be played last year, but was not because of COVID.
Uh-huh. Well, that would be nice playing at that arena.
No, a great stage. It's certainly preseason, early on in the season. No doubt about it. What do you think as far as the Pirates? How close do you feel that – are we close, do you think, to the NIT, or how close are we to getting back to the big dance in March Madness?
Well, I think they have a great coach, he's done a tremendous job with the team, and he's been getting top recruits, and I think he's getting the team closer and closer to reaching the NIT. I think it's going to happen. It's going to happen. I think the program is in the right path right now.
Gabe, well, one more question for me. Talking about today's college basketball, when you played, you chose to come to East Carolina and you played at East Carolina. There's always been transfers, but it is out of hand now. What do you think of the modern game, the transfer portal? Kids, just come and go as they want. It's getting worse all the time. A kid may be here 1 year somewhere. A kid may play at four schools in 4 years. Just your thoughts on that, and I don't know if you have any thoughts on the new likeness and imaging policy from the NCAA, where now players can go out and get endorsement deals while they're in school.
Yes, that is so tough. About guys leaving college and moving around to different universities, I don't like that. And from my personal experience, and I think that's something that I regret when I look back at my career playing in Argentina, I switched teams a lot. And at the end of the day, I don't know if that was the right decision, because I think it's good for someone to identify itself with, a college or with a club team. I play 15 years in Argentina, and I switch around so many teams that I can't really say, okay, I identify myself with this team. That's something that I regret, because, it would have been nice to have that one team that I felt, that was the place that I, stayed for a while. So, yeah, I think I don't like players switching university every year or every 2 years, because then you don't have that feeling of, belonging to school. Like ECU, ECU is a great, it's a big, nice family. I felt so comfortable there. And the people that have gone to ECU, everybody loves ECU. Everybody stays very attached to the university. And if you start switching around schools, I think, you lose that. I don't see that. That's a good thing. And then with the image, it's hard. It's hard because it's understandable on one part that, yes, players do risk a lot for universities playing, and, they might, get a, an injury that, prevent them, from moving on later on and, being able to, making money. So with this, maybe they get some kind of compensation, let's say, for the effort that you put into the game. But also understandable on the other side, that once you start losing that amateurism of college basketball, then it's gonna change the feeling of the game, the feeling of the fans, the students. So that's a tough one right there.
Yeah, I think the NCAA needs to reel that back in and kind of sanction it a little more, because right now it's the Wild West, basically, with that new rule. You got Alabama starting quarterback that is about to reach $1 million in endorsement deals already. That's just Miami, I believe. I can't remember the amount. Dave, Bubba, what do you guys know in football?
$6,000.
Say again?
Wasn't it $6 a player, Bubba, or an athlete?
it was several thousand dollars for every member of the football team that some guy's given them for supposed endorsement deals. To me, it needs to be reeled in a little bit. The NCAA is going to have to police it a little more, because now the starting quarterback from Alabama is a millionaire. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, there's nothing wrong with them getting money. I think that as far as like Gabe, like if you wanted to go and do a autograph signing and make some extra money, I don't have a problem with that. I think that's fantastic. But to have a guy be a millionaire on campus, I don't know. There's nothing wrong with making money, like stuff like that. Or like if you wanted to, speaking of barbecue, if you wanted to do a deal with Parker's Barbecue and have that barbecue sandwich and say, I'm Gabriel Mikulas and I love Parker's Barbecue, I have no problem with that. I think that's fine. I think it's the, like Kyle's saying, the, hey, this guy's making seven figures. And, you know, I know we're in America and, you know, great that, you know, like the American dream and you can make a lot of money. But there's something, I don't know, maybe. And another thing, Gabe, with college basketball, with a lot of the, that's one thing that I'm not quite clear on. Maybe Bubba and Kyle know about when name, image, and likeness as far as shoe deals. I mean, we already knew that there was stuff going on behind the scenes with Nike and Adidas.
From what I understand about the shoe deals is, yeah, the players can have shoe deals. In other words, we are an Adidas school. So if Adidas wants to sign a deal with a current East Carolina player, they can. Nike can also, but from what I understand, if you're in the correct, the Nike, you could not wear the Nike apparel anywhere associated with the school. It would have to be all done on your own time. You could do commercials for them, but you couldn't wear East Carolina apparel, et cetera, in the commercials.
Hmm. And that's crazy. That right there tells you that that's so tricky, because you want the guy, let's say Gabriel Mikulas has the, you know, the big Adidas deal or the big Nike deal, but yet you want to wear that stuff. I mean, you're getting paid to wear that stuff, right?
Right.
That's so crazy that, and I don't think that, and it's not like they didn't have any time. The NCAA knew they were going to have, this was coming. I mean, it was only a matter of time this was going to happen. So it's not like that this is something that happened overnight and they got sprung like this happened. It was something that they had plenty of time and they have plenty of lawyers. I thought that they would do a better job, but the Supreme Court, I mean, that was miserable. They didn't stand a chance when it made it to the Supreme Court. Not a one chance.
No one chance. I mean, this is going to change a lot of things. A lot of things.
Yeah, it is. I think this is just the beginning of peeling the onion back.
Mm-hmm. No question. And the bad thing is, once the train leaves the station, like the old saying goes, like Kyle was talking about, who's to say that I know they put some parameters, like we've talked about, that like there's certain, you can't get a deal from CBS or any of the, you know, there's certain things as far as the TV contract is concerned. They're putting some limitations on types of business, but anyway, before we let you go, Gabe, do you have a funny Bill Herrien story? I mean, Coach Herrien was, the one thing I remember about Coach Herrien is he must have had like 5,000 suits, because the guys would sweat more than any coach I've ever seen in my life. I could not believe how much that guy sweat, how much he sweated.
I mean, he left everything at games and practice. I mean, I never had a coach with so much energy. I mean, the way that he coached, it was unbelievable. I mean, just he was sweating, moving all over the bench, up and down. I mean, his face would transform during the game, during the practice. I mean, he didn't stop one second. He didn't stop one second. I mean, he was serious. He was so serious. And I remember one time, it was one of our first road trips first year that was at ECU, and we're playing away, and we won a few games at the beginning of the road, and then we lost the game pretty bad. And after the games on the road, you know, we get on the bus and, you know, we get pizza and talk to the guys, play cards, watch a movie. And after this game that we lost pretty bad, you know, we had our pizza and we're sitting there and, you know, we start to, you know, to come go back to Greenville. And, you know, I mean, you know, the bus was, you know, quiet and, you know, they didn't put a movie on. So, you know, I mean, we had like a 4-hour drive. I was like, so I got up and I went up back to the front of the bus to tell the bus driver to put a movie on. I mean, I wanted to do something. And coach was like, no, there's no movie tonight on the bus. We're not watching a movie. Everybody sit down and be quiet. I was like, okay. I went back to my seat.
So, Gabe, after you mentioned pizza and a movie on the way on road trips. If you won, did you get like mellow mushroom pizza? And if you lost, you got Little Caesars.
Like a day old Little Caesars.
No, the pizza didn't change. It was always the same brand. The only thing that changed was the entertainment.
Gotcha.
No question. Well, Gabe, thank you so much for your time with us. It was fun catching up with you, and definitely looking. Hopefully, we can meet you at the Charlotte game when we come there in September. No question about it. It's going to be a lot of fun, and glad to have you in North Carolina and Charlotte. And hopefully, we can get you. It'll be great to have you in September, the first home game. What's that date, Bubba, for the South Carolina game?
September 11th.
Yeah, you need to come to the game September 11th. Our first is South Carolina. Huge atmosphere. The Pirates finally having fans back in the stands and tailgating. You said you love tailgating, and yeah, we're going to have our own tailgate spot. So we'd love to have you as our guest. If you can come, we'd love to have you.
I'll be there, but they have to have the Eastern barbecue sandwich.
All right.
We got to.
And we'll have your chocolate and candy for you, okay? Thank you so much. Hope you have a great night. I look forward to meeting you soon, my friend.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for having me. It was
absolutely
great time.
All right. Thanks, Gabe.
Good night, buddy. Thanks to Gabriel Michalis. It was great for him to come on. And Kyle, I want to get your thoughts on, certainly we'll do a little bit of a roundtable before we go. Sure. One of the stories that's been driving me crazy, so I want to see what you know about it, and it's I'm a realignment nerd. What's the latest on Texas, Oklahoma? That's been the talk the last couple of days at Media Days for SEC and, of course, ACC Media Days in Charlotte. What's going on there? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, who knows what's going to happen? I think some of these Big 12 schools, Oklahoma State particularly, spoke out. Texas Tech, et cetera. I know they got to be getting tired of the same old song and dance from Texas and Oklahoma. Look, here's my personal thoughts on it, then I'll tell you what I think may happen and what could happen. And I personally think it's stupid from Texas and Oklahoma, and here's why. Yep. Their path to the playoff is much easier in the Big 12.
Exactly.
They make plenty of money in the Big 12. They rule that league. If they go to the SEC, they're just two more schools, you know, in a conglomerate. I mean, you know, it's that the SEC becomes is a hard league to win. And now it's going to be even harder. I mean, Texas and Oklahoma are great programs. They'd be able to compete in the SEC. But I don't get why they're doing it. It's illogical to me. To me, you know, are you doing it just because you think you need to be in the most prestigious league? Well, what difference does it make? Clemson's in the ACC. Look what they're doing. Exactly. You don't have to be in the SEC to win a national championship. And it's not like, you know, the Big 12, yeah, their money's a little less than the ACC and the SEC and the Big 10, but they're still making shitload of money on their contract.
Yeah, please don't talk about Texas not having money.
Yeah, no, they got plenty of money. The Longhorn Network, Oklahoma's got plenty of money. They all got plenty of money. So I don't understand why they're doing it. But if it happens, here's my thoughts on if it happens. What is the Big 12 going to do at that point? They'll be left with eight teams. You know, there's always been talk that the Pac-12 would reach out and go to 16 at that point too, if the SEC did. So then would they snatch four from the Big 12? If they did that, then the league's dead. So then where do the other four members go? They'd probably come to the American. That'd be your best case scenario. But God knows the best case scenario never happens for East Carolina. So let's say Oklahoma, Texas move over to the SEC. They're left with eight schools. So the Big 12 then expands. My guess is they would go to 12 at that point. Mm-hmm. So they would take four schools. Are they going to take four from the American, or are they going to take two from the American plus, say, Boise and BYU? I think worst case for East Carolina would be if the Big 12 took four from the American and went to 12, or worse yet, six from the American and went to 14.
Would you take East Carolina?
I take East Carolina? Absolutely.
No, I know. I'm saying, no. I know our perspective. I'm saying if you're the Big 12.
I think the only way East Carolina gets in is if the Big 12 decides to go to 14. Follow along with me. If the Big 12 decides to go to 14, if they lose Texas and Oklahoma, they're with eight schools. If they decide to go to 14 and they say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to have two 7-team divisions. We're going to 14. And we're fine on the West. West Virginia needs travel opponent or travel partners for a division. And they take all teams from the East. And they take six teams from the American. Then we have a shot. But we still might not get in. You know, I could easily see if that in that scenario, them taking UCF, USF, Memphis, Cincinnati, Temple,
Houston.
Well, in this scenario, they're only taking Eastern teams. Temple and Navy.
Okay.
So that to me is the only way we get in if that happens. I think best case for East Carolina, like I said, would be if the Big 12 loses Texas and Oklahoma, if the Pac-12 then goes to 16 and takes four members from the Pac-12, say Oklahoma State, Texas Tech, Baylor and Kansas, and then they're left with four members, and those four, I don't know where else they would go besides the American, the four that would be left. That would be best case. The second best case scenario for the American and for East Carolina would be if they only lost two teams, they meaning the American. The best thing that can happen for East Carolina right now would be Texas and Oklahoma State's put, the American stays as is, and the playoff goes to 12 teams.
Yep. And what are the chances? Have you guys, speaking of realignment in this case for the American expansion, is there any more? There was rumblings a little bit again about the American as far as with Boise. Do you think Boise and BYU and Air Force, would that be possible for us to, we're at 11 teams to go to 14 to try to strengthen? I know that the talk over the last year has been, you know, like stay put, but at some point, you need to add at least one school, and maybe three. Would 14 would be a good fit, I think, for the American, don't you?
You mean if Oklahoma, Texas State's put in the Big 12?
Yeah.
I think we're going. I think at some point you're going to see the American add somebody. I mean,
at least one.
I don't know. You know, I think when the playoff thing happens, if it happens, and everybody seems confident it's going to happen, that it's going to go to 12 teams, and your six highest ranked conference champions get in. It'll be interesting to see how things play out at that point with adding teams, et cetera. But I don't know. This is interesting to watch. Everybody needs to be paying close attention to what happens with Texas and Oklahoma, because it will affect East Carolina. I know a lot of people probably don't realize that, but it will, because the Big 12, if they survive, if the Pac-12 doesn't react and go to 16 also, if the Big 12 survives, they will be looking directly at the American for replacement teams.
And Bubba, I had a question for you and Kyle, because you guys are the college football experts on the show, especially. Do you guys, that was one of the questions I had for both of you tonight for the roundtable. Do you guys see in that very thing whatever the SEC does, everybody else does, do you see the ACC and all the other conferences or a few more go to 16, like the super leagues, like we've been hearing about for many years?
That's the $100,000 question, Dave. That's what I'm saying. Will the Pac-12 respond? That's always been the rumor, that the Pac-12 would go to 16 if the SEC did. I think the ACC would if Notre Dame would come on board. And then that would probably be the saving grace for West Virginia, because that would probably be the other team.
What about East Carolina and the ACC?
Well, you know what? If our governor would help us out, your boy Governor Cooper. He can make it happen.
Yes, he could.
So he certainly couldn't make them let East Carolina in, but he could certainly put his foot down on saying,
hey, it's happened before.
Yeah.
It's happened before with two other teams. The last time was in 2003 with
Governor Virginia. Yeah, that's right. And I think kind of what I read from Oklahoma State's statement last night, I think they're going to be reaching out for similar from their governor for Oklahoma, saying you can't move without us. So
what do you mean? So both the Oklahoma schools going?
It's kind of what I, Bubba, you read that statement, they said they would be looking out for their best interests and contacting people, et cetera.
Wow. I haven't heard that. Wow.
So to me, I took that as, if you're Oklahoma State, I don't know what more you can do than contact your governor and say, hey, tell Oklahoma, they can't move unless Oklahoma State comes with you. And I don't know that the university has to listen to the governor, but it would be interesting to see what will happen with that whole scenario.
Yep. Can we get Lincoln Riley on the show? Oh my goodness, that is crazy. Great. All right, let's talk now. One of the big announcements. Speaking of Pirate football, Bubba, I know that a big day for Pirate Nation is we get one of our Pirate brothers back.
Yeah, exciting news on former East Carolina wide receiver from 1994 to 97, and then also a member of Scotty Montgomery's staff as a running backs coach, Jason Nichols, who had most recently been on the staff at the University of Richmond for the last year or two. Coach Nichols is coming home in an administrative role as the new director of football player development. So that's very exciting. And Coach Houston said to have someone in this position who not only can offer an unparalleled skill set to help develop the young men in our program, but to combine that with Jason's firsthand experience as a Pirate is immeasurable. He's passionate about East Carolina, understands our culture, and has impacted many lives during his coaching career. I'm confident that his communication with our players will certainly resonate as both meaningful and compelling.
His wife is a professor, correct? Is she coming back to East Carolina also?
I didn't realize that. That's
yeah. I remember when we had him on that. I'd forgotten that, but a good recall there, Kyle, as far as Coach Nichols' wife.
Yeah. So I know with that, that's a great thing to have him on and have him back. And like Coach said, Houston said, you got a guy that knows Pirate Nation. He knows about Greenville. He knows about that. And then having the role not only as a coach but player development, that's going to be huge. I tell you. I know we had the COVID year last year, but I really believe we're going to do great this year. And next year is going to be a very special year at East Carolina. I know we had some other items to talk about, Bubba. I'll pitch it back to you.
Yeah. Next up, the recruiting has been going very well for Coach Houston and staff. Today we received our 14th commitment. Wow. As you see there, scrolling across the bottom of the screen, if you're viewing, P.J. Simmons, a 6'2", 190-pound defensive back out of Eagles Landing Christian Academy down in Georgia, which, guys, is actually the alma mater of East Carolina running back Keaton Mitchell. So we go back to Eagles Landing and get a very talented defensive back who had offers from App State. And I'm trying to recall Cincinnati was his biggest offer other than East Carolina. So you had Cincinnati, App State, Liberty, UAB, I think Buffalo, some pretty good football programs already offering P.J. Simmons.
And by the way, Bubba, isn't the recruiter for that area Steve Shankweiler, right? Coach Shank, if my memory serves me right?
Yeah.
I believe so. I'm not sure who else may recruit Georgia in addition to Coach Shank, but I know with his ties there, he certainly has some areas there in Georgia and also Alabama.
Great to see that. And certainly, man, Keaton, if he's anything like Keaton Mitchell, man, we are in for talk about Kyle, that's your favorite position. So running back, we're going to be loaded at running back here the next handful of years, right?
Yeah, I don't know what you were getting at when you said that's my favorite position. But, yeah, running back would be my favorite position on the football field. I think we got two very talented backs. And, I haven't seen any of the other kids coming in. I hear a lot of good things about Pop McKay. Hopefully we'll have three good backs, if not more.
Absolutely. Pop McKay is a guy that was offered by at least half, if not more than half, of the SEC.
Wow.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of
him. Well, that should be an immediate impact. Hopefully these guys, look, if you got three guys that are going to make an immediate impact, you got to find a way to get them the ball. And, boys, let's be competitive with each other, not get the boo-boo face and want to transfer. Let's be a three-headed monster.
Yeah, because that very thing of you never know what the next man up with that position with injuries and different schemes and skill sets they bring to the table, why not? The more the merrier, in my book.
And speaking of Rajay Harris, last year, you guys are obviously well aware of the tremendous true freshman season that he had, running for over 600 yards. And Rajay, today, he was announced as a Doak Walker Award watch list candidate. So congratulations to him. And there you see him wearing the new all-purple uniform, pretty sharp-looking. Some of the glimpses we had caught of this uniform, wasn't very sure how the all-gold lettering and numbers would look, but in this picture, it looks pretty good. It pops.
Yeah, people kept going, well, you can't wear the purple jersey with white pants. It's not going to look right because of the stripe. And I kept thinking, well, I bet we're not going to do that. I bet we're going to do all purple and have gold pants also. And that's exactly what we did. And, no, I like it a lot. The time I saw the all-gold numerals and all, I think it's going to look really sharp under the lights.
Look at that. That's sharp. I like that. That looks really, really good. I like it a lot. I'll tell you what. And you know what? It's our team. So whatever damn jerseys they're going to wear, I'm not going to be pulling against the team. I do have the worst uniforms real quick. Got to be that 2004 in-state game in Charlotte with John Thompson. Don't you think, guys, that highlighter was all gold?
They were bad looking, and we played terrible. And it was a complete disaster from beginning to end.
Yeah, no question about it. So,
one thing that I was kind of confused by, and that I'm not a big fan of, you notice on the far right there for our viewers, you see the white jersey and then the purple pants with the gold stripe. The jersey really doesn't have any gold other than the pirate on the sleeve. So I'm not a huge fan of that gold stripe on the pants. No. I think it would look better with a solid purple pant, but pair of pants. But other than that, not bad at all. And something else that was a little bit different, the all white look. And I'm sure, obviously, they can mix it up with a purple chrome or the matte black, which you see pictured here, an all white uniform with a matte black helmet.
Did you say there's a gold? Oh, okay, the purple. Okay, with the gold stripe with the. No purple on the jersey. I see what you're saying.
I like it.
I think it's still all right. It's
yeah. Hey, the good news is we have a great coaching staff, great players, and we're going to win more games in those uniforms. So whatever the uniform, and I understand what you're saying, Bubba. I think that overall the purple jerseys with the yellow, the gold. Lettering is my favorite all in all. I think that looks really, really sharp and can't wait to see those. I take it we're going to see those. We're going to be we'll see those the second game of the season with South Carolina, right? We won't wear those, obviously, in Charlotte.
I'm assuming we're the away team, yeah.
Yeah, we'll be wearing, unless App State, with the early season game, it's their home game. I would imagine that they'll be wearing – all black, but who knows? In this day and age, you never know when they may choose to wear something.
And look, and since it's a neutral site, we may break out a purple jersey. All we have to do is get App State's permission. And even if App State doesn't give us permission, we can still do it. We'll just get a 15-yard penalty.
There you go. There you have it.
But something else, guys, in addition to the uniform reveal, you have the season ticket blitz that was launched by ECU Athletics this week. Tremendous videos being put out by Brian Bailey, or narrated by Brian Bailey, I should say, and then Brian Meador and Greg Pierce and staff doing an unbelievable job highlighting just some of the fond memories that have taken place at Daddy Ficklin Stadium down through the years. And then also today's release highlighted the quarterbacks, obviously Jeff Blake, Marcus Crandall, David Garrard, Shane Carden, et cetera.
Where can those be found? I have not seen those.
We've retweeted them on our social media, and you can find those at the Sports OBJ. But originally they were found at ECU Pirates on Twitter, and then I'm sure ECU Pirates FB on Twitter, the official football account, retweeted it as well.
I should get on Twitter more often.
No doubt about it.
We're trying to tell you. But something else, obviously the reason they're doing that is to help generate excitement as the season's quickly approaching. And obviously we did something very similar here recently, getting a quote from East Carolina legend Luke Fisher. And let's go to that season ticket promo right now with former Pirate tight end and ECU Hall of Famer Luke Fisher.
Hello, Pirate Nation. This is Luke Fisher, Hall of Fame tight end from the Peach Bowl. I want to send much love to the Pirate family and all my brothers and sisters out there that bleed purple and gold. I can truly say that I believe this will be our year. Our guys will put the time in and make it happen. One question I have is, will you believe?
I believe, guys, we're right at 12,000, very, very close to 12,000, right, Bubba?
Yeah, 11,850. That was the number released on Wednesday the 21st.
Yeah.
So the goal is obviously 14,000, as has been stated ad nauseum throughout the summer. And, hey, you think about it, guys, back 10 years ago, and I know the landscape was different. The Pirates have been winning and going to bowl games year in, year out. But we're half of what we were then in terms of selling season tickets. So
24,000, right?
Pirate Nation is trending in the right direction. Jump on board, get back on the ship right now, and let's blow 14,000 out of the water.
Yeah, get your season tickets.
It's no reason not to get it. We've got a great home schedule. You've got the great league that we're playing in. And it doesn't matter who we're playing. We should go out there and, if nothing else, go out there and tailgate, have some Pirate beverages, go in, and let's rock the stadium. And I know Coach Houston talks about the big advantage we have having over 51,000, right, Bubba? 51,000 people that we could have in the stadium. That makes a huge difference in creating the atmosphere. And that very first press conference that he was talking about that really fired everybody up, and his famous speech at JMU would lock the damn gates, right? I mean,
yeah, and obviously season tickets, we're talking about home games. The App State game is not included in the season ticket package, even though it's a neutral site game, technically an App State home game. Yeah. And in some ways, as far as them controlling certain things, as far as ticketing, et cetera. But hey, don't wait to that South Carolina game. Jump on board and go ahead. And there's plenty of tickets available. Yes, you may or may not. I'm not sure right now. Go ahead and call 1-800-ECU or go to ecupirates.com. But if you can't get them there, you can get them through the venue. So find a way to get to Bank of America Stadium, because I promise you, App State, their fans are going to show up. And Pirate Nation needs to do the same.
Yeah, no doubt about it. They're going to be – you better believe that in that South Carolina game, there's going to be a lot of South Carolina fans. I don't want to see that whole stadium. What is their colors, Bubba? Is it more maroon, right?
It's maroon and black, yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, we don't want to see that. We do not want to see a whole bunch of that in our stadium. We want to see purple and gold. Yeah,
well, first things first, we got to have State in Charlotte, and we need to –
Oh yeah,
many Pirate fans there as can go, and let's go take our spot back. That to me is what that App State game is. We need to take our spot back. App State is what we were. They're the team in North Carolina outside the Power Five, going out knocking off South Carolina and North Carolina and getting the national attention and getting ranked into the top 25 and everybody stroking their ego and telling them how great they are, and they've earned it. They've been kicking ass and taking names while we've been over here getting our asses kicked and wiping tears away. Well, we got to go take our spot back. App State's what we were. They're what we were. Go get your spot, boys. Go get your spot. They got your spot. They're the darlings of the group of five. They're the team everybody's talking about in North Carolina. They're the team knocking off Power Five schools. They're going to have their chest poked out, expecting to beat our ass. Appalachian State's a 13-point favorite over East Carolina. Go get your spot back.
Let's do it. Let's rock Bank of America Stadium. Is that September the 2nd, Bubba, off the top of my head?
Yes.
Yeah, September 2nd. Yeah.
September 2nd, we take our spot back.
I love it, Kyle. I love it. No doubt about it. If we have a chip on our shoulder. Let's go out there and let's shock the world. Let's beat App State. Let's make those people that set up the lines there, let's make them wrong. I know about it. 13.5. Let's put that on every single locker in the locker room. 13.5.
That's no disrespect. Look, I mean, they've earned that. I do that. Yeah. Go get it. Go take it. If you don't want to be a 13-point underdog, then go take it. It's yours to take. Go take it.
Absolutely. I mean, some people are looking down their noses at App State and, oh, they play in the Sun Belt, this and that. And the Sun Belt was a tremendous conference. Louisiana, Coastal Carolina, and was much better last year than it had been recent years. Georgia Southern, but App State in the last 6 years has won 63 ball games. We've won 21. Now, what does that mean as far as September 2nd? Nothing other than they're used to winning.
Exactly.
And we not so much, but as long as we have the right mindset and we go and get it done, Pirate Nation just needs to believe that because I know the team believes it.
Boy, if some Pirate fans are saying they play in the Sun Belt, don't that sound familiar? ACC schools saying, well, they play in Conference USA, they play in the American. There's a reason they're a 13-point favorite. They deserve to be. But we can do something about it. We can certainly beat them. So, just like I said, go get your spot back. And some breaking news from the Sun Belt. Guys, Sun Belt just re-upped their television contract with ESPN. ESPN gave them an extension. This is per James. I guess it was announced today at SEC. I don't know if it's Sun Belt Media Day or what, but the Sun Belt will have 50% more content now on linear ESPN platforms, meaning not just ESPN Plus, ESPNU, ESPN2, et cetera. And 40% of that content will be on Saturdays.
Wow. Definitely, if you're in the MAC, I know they want to be on television, but not to get off on a tangent, but Tuesday night games are horrible. But
well, you know what? The MAC doesn't draw anyway. So I don't really know the difference it makes for them. But I'll tell you, the Sun Belt is really passing Conference USA at this point.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Conference USA's got some schools with some big markets, and I think their commissioner is horrible and done a piss poor job of managing that league, particularly from the media right side.
They're on Facebook, aren't they? On Facebook, Kyle?
They did some of their games on Facebook in the past through Stadium. Yes, they have it's a multi layered deal. Their primary contract with CBS Sports Network, but they don't get very many games on any of the ESPN platforms besides ESPN Plus. The Sun Belt really is passing Conference USA, and it goes to show to me when the Sun Belt made decisions to get the best schools they could versus Conference USA going after media markets. Sometimes media markets don't pan out. I think there's definitely some good schools in Conference USA, and the league has potential, but right now the Sun Belt's whipping them.
No doubt about it. They've been doing great. And definitely great coaches and great programs. Hey, Bubba, before we go, speaking of coaches, we've had a chance between you and I and USO. We've had some great coaches interviews this week.
Yeah, we have. I was able to catch up with new running backs coach for the Pirates, Chris Foster. So definitely go to our YouTube channel and check that out. Had a nice response so far, several hundred views. And then also Coach Dooley. We caught up with Joe Dooley to talk about the major roster overhaul that's taking place for a second time now in his tenure. But hey, don't be fooled by the fact that we have 9 new players. And what I mean by that is the guys that were more of the key contributors last year, with the exception of Jaden Gardner, are returning. We have 4 of our top 5 scorers back, guys like Tristan Newton, Tremont Robinson-White, et cetera, Brandon Suggs. And now we have some tremendous talent coming in, some that's ready to contribute immediately, like Vance Jackson Jr., and then also Winston Tabbs from Boston College. So very excited about where basketball is headed. I really think we're going to surprise some people and be right there flirting with a winning season for the first time in an awfully long time. And then we had also caught up with Donnie Kirkpatrick, Blake Harrell, and then also Tim Dowse. All three coordinators have been on the show here in the last month.
Listened to some of the interview last night with our running backs coach, and boy, he's country.
Yeah, no doubt. But I'll tell you what, he fits in great. And with that running backs room, he has got a lot to work with. And we have a lot more across the board, as we're finding out. We're going to continue with our coaches' interviews all summer long. So stay tuned to that. We'll have media day coming up, looks like right now, unless things change. Sunday, August the 15th, guys, we hope to be in Greenville. We'll keep our fingers crossed, all depending on COVID numbers. And we won't even go there. Guys, do you have anything before we go?
Looking forward to the season getting here. Can't get here fast enough.
No doubt. Bubba, do you have anything? I guess he's packing, getting ready for a big vacation. Be safe there, Bubba.
Oh, where's he going now? Multiple vacations every year for the Rosenbaums.
Hawaii, I think. Hawaii. No, I'm kidding. I'm not sure on that one. His sound, we're having some technical difficulties there with him. Hey, Bubba, appreciate you, man, for everything behind the scenes. He works really hard on the graphics and setting up the interviews. A lot of great stuff behind the scenes for the program. Kyle, buddy, appreciate you as well for promotion. A lot of stuff too. And obviously your contributions to the on-air product as well. Guys, we'll have our next podcast in the next few days. Appreciate you very much. Thanks to Gabriel Miklas, who has been with us for a good part of the show. And we appreciate him as well. A former standout for Bill Herrien days of our East Carolina basketball history for sure. All right. Until next time, we'll see you next time. And we'll have it right here. Good night, everybody. And go Pirates.
This is Brian Meador from East Carolina University. You are listening to The Sports Objective, the official, unofficial podcast of the Pirates.